2FM.
Now, thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Wednesday the 11th of May and this is Game On. Coming up on the show, Keith Tracy will discuss the Premier League run-in, Nadine Doherty will talk to us about ladies football, and we'll have Chris McNulty on boxing. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Now, Nadine Doherty is with me in studio. We are going to get straight into the Premier League. I'm delighted to say that Keith Tracy is with us on the line. Keith, there's a lot of really big games on at the moment, but I think we probably need to start with the fact that Manchester City are going to have Erling Haaland in their ranks very, very soon. Keith, how are you?
I'm very well, Marie. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks so much for joining us.
On yesterday's show, we discovered a new use for hats at funerals.
We might still have the two Johnnies live out on air. And
we're back from three.
How are you, Keith?
I'm very well, Marie. Very well.
Very sorry about that. You know, the two Johnnies cutting in across us. They haven't turned off their studio. We can't seem to get rid of them.
It's no problem.
Not sure how bad. Nadine Doherty is with us as well, and we're going to talk about Erling Haaland. Just your thoughts first on him, Keith, and what an addition he's going to be to Manchester City.
I think he'll be a huge addition. I really do. You know, when you look at it, you know he's a fabulous player. When Man City come looking, you obviously know he's a really, really good player. But when you dig a little bit deeper and you look into the numbers, he's only 21 years old. It took him 14 games in the Champions League to score 20 goals. And he's at the top of a really, really illustrious list when you look at some of the players he's ahead of. Raul, you know, Champions League legend. Like I say, he's only 21. And the fact that Manchester City have got him for £51 million with the release clause. I know there's add-ons for agents and all, but the initial fee is £51 million, which is really good, given the fair play rules as well. So it's all around just a brilliant addition to City. And, you know, a lot of people have said City, you know, Liverpool got back at them later on in the year and, you know, it's going to go to the wire. And a lot of people have said that that's because of City's lack of striker. And to be honest, you know, this is the best striker in the world they're getting. And to get him for £50 million, it really is a steal. And he could be there for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you know, as long as he wants, because he's so young.
Yeah, Keith, really exciting for them and probably will end up being a bargain. And not that Man City need the money, but who's going to leave, you know, because it's not the money, but it's guys who are looking for game time. So who do you see possibly moving on to make way for Haaland?
Well, I'm an Arsenal fan, Nadine, so I'm along the thinking of Gabriel Jesus. And to be honest, he's been brilliant the last couple of weeks. He's been brilliant. He was brilliant against Real Madrid in the semi-finals over the two legs. He scored some big goals in the tail end of the Premiership. But I think he's at a time in his career where he just needs to play games week in, week out. He needs to be the number one striker. And that City, I think he just struggles to get that title of the number one striker. And I think with Arteta having coached him at Manchester City, I think it's a match made in heaven for him to come to Arsenal. So I hope for his sake and his career's sake that he does move on to Arsenal, because I'd love to see him playing week in, week out. I think he would reach 20 goals a season, and I think it would push Arsenal that little bit closer to the top four as well.
They need something, don't they?
They need a lot more than Gabriel Jesus, but I think it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
For Arsenal anyway.
So Keith, with all the focus on Haaland, do you think there's any chance that maybe Manchester City will take the eye off the ball tonight and maybe Wolves might get one over on them?
I don't think so. I think the Champions League would have really, really hurt having lost in the way they did to Real Madrid in the last couple of minutes. And, you know, a lot of people have made Liverpool favourites for the Premiership because of that, but I'm actually going in the opposite direction. I think it will sting City so much that they're not going to let the Premiership out of their grasp. They're 3 points ahead at the minute. And, you know, Liverpool are on their coattails. They're just waiting for them to slip up. They beat Villa 2-1 in a really entertaining game last night. And I just, you know, if it was anybody else, I could probably see a slip-up. But Wolves don't score an awful lot of goals. And even if they do score one, I can see City scoring two or three. And I don't see Wolves getting, you know, your fours and even your threes to get a draw. So I think City will just blow them away with their firepower. But having said that, Wolves are having an outstanding season as well. They're very, very good for different reasons. But yeah, an outstanding team, Wolves in their own right. But I think City will just blow them away with their firepower.
So you described Liverpool-Aston Villa as a really entertaining game. You're definitely not a Liverpool fan anyway. I think it was quite tense, really.
It was a very tense game, but there was a lot of tackles going in. There seemed to be a bit of needle in the game, you know. I think that the ref, he made a couple of wrong decisions, but in terms of the tackles, he seemed to be able to let it flow. He wasn't, you know, when lads were going down for the soft ones, he just waved his hands, and I think they got the gist of it pretty early that it wasn't going to be a soft game. And I think it was refereed well to a certain degree, but no, I'm not a Liverpool fan, and that's probably the reason that I can enjoy it rather than you know, biting me nails. But I thought it was a great game, and Liverpool come out on top again. But a lot of people are talking about Haaland, and you know, you move on to Liverpool and think, how are Liverpool going to react? And that man, Sadio Mane, who scored the winner for Liverpool last night, there's big rumours that he's on his way to Bayern Munich. Now, you know, this could be a tactic to try and get him the same money that Salah is currently negotiating. These are all, you know, pawns in the chess. But if they do lose Mane, and you know, Salah doesn't negotiate the new contract like people think they will, you know, they really need to react. I think this signing Erling Haaland from Manchester City, I think Liverpool need to react in the same way. Not necessarily a striker, maybe a midfielder, but I think they need to build up their squad to react to Manchester City's.
Yeah, I think especially when you look at the table and you see the importance of the goal difference as well, and you know that someone like Haaland is going to even add more goals, you would think that trying to tie down the strikers would be crucial, just given the fact that we're going to be talking about goal difference so much over the next couple of weeks.
That's it. But that's why the lads up front get paid the big bucks, because that's where the games are won and lost. I know defensively you can win and you can lose a game in defence, but putting the ball in the back of the net is the hardest thing to do. And you know, when you've got people like Salah and Mane, you know, I'd give them what they want. I know it's a lot easier said than done, but you know, if you're looking to replace your wingers, Sadio Mane and Salah, they're up there. They're probably number one and number two wingers in the world. So, you know, Liverpool, it's coming to a transition now in the back of boardroom level, where they really need to put their money where their mouth is and secure these lads for the next couple of years and make sure they're going to be competing with City for the next couple of years, because it doesn't look like City are going to take their foot off the gas anytime soon.
So who should Liverpool go after then? Like, what do they need?
I'd like to see them maybe get another centre-half. I know, look, Van Dijk's unbelievable. He's the best centre-half in the world, in my opinion. But I think they need somebody with him. I know Matip scored last night, but I don't see him as a full-term replacement. I think if somebody was a little bit stronger, a little bit quicker, and could read the game as well as Van Dijk with the high line they play, I think they just need to... maybe even a more defensive-minded centre midfielder. I think Jordan Henderson now, he's been a brilliant servant for Liverpool. Next season again, he's going to get a little bit leggy. There's a World Cup for England as well. So I think maybe in the midfield they need some legs and maybe another defender for me. But listen, to be fair, there isn't an awful lot in between the two squads. I just think with City going and getting Haaland, I think that's Klopp's next move, is to knock on the door and say, listen, we need somebody in the door, because Manchester City aren't standing still and we can't afford to stand still either.
Where's Harry Kane fit into all of this, do you think?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I thought he was going to go to City last year when City were going for, you know, a bid and another bid and another bid. You thought it was just a matter of time before Daniel Levy gave in and eventually City got their man. But I'm not sure where he goes from there. You know, maybe he's just one of them lads who... he's Tottenham true and true, and it doesn't look like that, because he has voiced his opinion and he wants to leave and he wants to win trophies. But I'm not sure where he goes. Does he go to Liverpool? Possibly. Do we see Liverpool, you know, breaking the bank to go and get him? No, because there's no great need. I think Jurgen Klopp, like when you look at Diaz that's come in the door and you look at Jota that's come in the door, they weren't necessarily superstars. They were very, very good players in their own right, but they come into Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp has brought them to the next level. So I think maybe more players like that, they'll bring players in that are on the fringes and that Klopp thinks he can bring to the next level. Not necessarily a Harry Kane, you're done deals, because, you know, what was getting thrown around last year, 150 million, and then you're talking wages as well. I know that would be a lot lower this year, but I don't see Liverpool throwing 100 million around for Harry Kane.
No, Keith, and I agree. And I look at Harry Kane now and I'm thinking, could it be a Jamie Vardy case that he sits for too long. And, you know, Harry Kane's not getting any younger. The top clubs, you know, as we said, Man City signed Haaland. Is it a case that he could just end up finishing his career in Tottenham?
It could, you know, just... Daniel Levy, I don't think, has done him many favours. I think he's quite stubborn, and he wants him there, which is, you know, not great for Hardy if he wants to get out. And the price tag that's on his head as well is, when you're English and you're playing the Premier League and being the English captain, there seems to be an extra 20 million on his head because he's an English international. And the fact that it's Tottenham, there seems to be another 20 million on top. And I think the price tag is putting people off. I think him and... Son have a great relationship, and Tottenham have a new stadium. Conte's come in the door. I think Hardy is quietly happy at Spurs. You know, they're not winning trophies, but, you know, I think maybe his thirst could be quenched with England. He might win one or two trophies with England and be happy at Spurs. And like I say, I do expect Conte to take Spurs to the next level. Still fighting for fourth this year. Every possibility, if they can win the London Derby tomorrow against Arsenal, that he could nick fourth. But I don't know. I don't see any, like, I don't see him moving to City and Liverpool, and anything other than that for Harry Kane, for me, is a sidewards move, unless you're talking, you know, going to Spain or something like that.
All right, we'll get on to Tottenham and Arsenal in a few minutes, but let's quickly run through this evening's game. So Leeds United are playing Chelsea, and just given the FA Cup final coming up and Chelsea's form of late, Leeds are in dire need of points, and you'd never know, they could get them against Chelsea tonight.
They could, yeah. I'm all the science coming out of Chelsea the last couple of weeks, I know, with the Abramovich thing and the money being capped for away trips and all that sort of stuff. But the football, it's gone downhill. I feared a couple of the Chelsea boys could be on the beach. And listen, they do have excuses. There is a lot of stuff happening in the background. But for me, when you see that, you'd like the professionals to be professional and just see it out till the end. And, you know, I know they've got a cup final on Sunday, is it, or Saturday, but I think there's an upset. I do think Leeds will get something. Leeds haven't got a point in the last three games, and they did play well against Arsenal in patches, and then Aylan obviously got the very silly red card against Arsenal, and it's a different game then. But Leeds, the level on points with Burnley, they really do need something. And I have a sneaky feeling that Chelsea do have one eye on the final on the weekend. So I think there could be an upset there for Leeds, which obviously Everton will have to react today. And I think it's Spurs and Burnley on Sunday as well, which turns into another huge game.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. All right, you mentioned Watford and Everton tonight. Watford already relegated. Everton in need of points as well, and playing well, getting some good wins, and they have that bit of momentum.
Yeah, momentum this time in the season. It's everything at the bottom and at the top. The team that's winning or the team that's just picking up points. I have a sneaky feeling in this one as well. You know, it's nailed on that Everton are going to beat Watford and move away. Watford have nothing to play for. They're already relegated. Watford just announced they're going to get a new manager. So Roy Hodgson is moving on as well. I just have a sneaky feeling that, you know, being in a dressing room where you've been relegated before, the team talk is easy. Go and ruin their day. Just go and get everything, bring everything down with us. And that's all you want to do as a player, because you're thinking, we've been relegated. If we have a chance to drag another team down with us, let's do it. And there could be a little bit of an upset there as well. There's big games all over the place, and you can see different storylines developing in all of them. I think there's a couple of twists and turns here tonight in a couple of the games.
So what about Watford having a new boss? So it's Forest Green Rovers, former boss Rob Edwards is their new manager for the upcoming championship season. Will that come into play? Like, they know that they have a new boss and the season is coming to an end, and there, you know, there could be change. Some might want to stay, some might want to go, and will trying to impress him in any way come into it?
Probably not. If I'm a player and I'm playing there tonight, it's really easy for you to start booking your holiday and think, I'm playing in the championship next season, or maybe somebody might come and buy me. There's a new manager coming in. Is he going to fancy me? Does he not fancy me? There's a lot of question marks over, you know, from a player's point of view, over Watford at the minute. So, you know, there's a game tonight against Everton. Keep it really simple. Just play the game in front of you. Don't get too bogged down with what might happen in a month's time or 2 weeks' time. Just play the game in front of you. But, you know, Watford, I don't know, with the new manager coming in, could there be a reaction? There could be, but they could also take their foot off the gas. You know, with Regnick coming into United, I know it's quite similar because he was only given the job for a certain amount of time. Roy Hodgson still has 2 games to go after this one. It's very hard to listen to a man who you know is not going to be there in a couple of weeks' time or in months' time, whatever the time frame is. So Roy Hodgson, it'll be hard for it to get his message across to the players because, like I say, the players deep down will be thinking, you know, I'm not going to run through a wall for you because ultimately you're not going to be here in a couple of weeks' time. So I think Watford will either take a hammering or they'll win the game. It's going to be that one. I don't think it'll be a tight 2-1. I think Watford will either go and win it or they'll take a hammering. It's all down to the mindset.
Yeah, there's so much to be looking out for tonight. Leicester and Norwich as well, 7:45. And it's just an interesting one from the Brendan Rodgers point of view, because if we were talking at the start of the season, we would never think that Brendan Rodgers would be under pressure at this stage heading into a game against Norwich.
Yeah, well, when you look at it, they're sitting 14th in the league and, you know, they did okay in Europe. They got beat by Roma in the semi-finals, but other than that, it's just been 2 stop-start in the Premier League, and I feel like every now and then they've had a tough game coming up in Europe, and they've took their foot off the gas in the Premier League, and ultimately they've paid for it. And you know, Brendan Rodgers might have a look and think, you know, there's been one or two injuries to key players. You know, Johnny Evans hasn't been fit for a large part of the season. Jamie Vardy's missed a large part of the season, and ultimately I don't think the squad was big enough to go and take on the task of Europe and trying to finish in the top 6 in the Premier League. I think it's obviously caught up with West Ham as well to a certain degree. They're flagging now at the minute, coming 4th all season, now they're 7th. And Leicester as well looked like a top half finish, but the more they were in Europe, the longer they stayed in Europe, the more they came off the gas in the Premiership. And they're probably just a victim of their own success, going so deep in the Europa Conference and just not being able to sustain it in the Premier League. Having said that, I expect them to get the win pretty easily tonight. Both teams actually haven't won since the 10th of April was Norwich's last win, and the 10th of April was Leicester's last win. So when you look at the stats, you know, you can only look at a Leicester win. Norwich have conceded 75 goals in 35 games, which is, it's a really baffling stat, and you don't have to look much further to why they've been relegated than that stat alone. So I expect Leicester to be able to exploit them in defence and put 2 or 3 on the board and, you know, get out of sight and Norwich not be able to catch them.
What about Spurs and Arsenal tomorrow? Does it feel like all the pressure is on Spurs?
It does. You know, Arsenal can afford to draw it and still be in a good place. They're 4 points clear at the minute. They're on 66 and Spurs are on 62. So they're 4 points clear. Even if Spurs can win it, they're a point behind with 2 games to go. So Arsenal are in the driving seat. They know that. But again, it's a mindset, you know. Do Arsenal go and attack the game like they need the points? Because if you go and you sort of, you know, you're only half in the game because you're half playing for the draw, you can get slapped on the wrist pretty quickly, especially in a derby. So if I was Mikel Arteta, I'd be saying, lads, you know, it's nil all. Forget about the 4-point difference. Let's go out there, really, really put a performance for fans in the derby and don't give it to Tottenham, because it's clearly a race between the two enemies for the 4th spot. So if Arsenal don't get it, Spurs will get it, and if Spurs don't get it, Arsenal will get it. So you don't want to be handing it to your rival, so go out and win the game. It's a huge derby tomorrow.
Yeah, it really is. It's a great one if you're not a fan of either team, I guess.
Yeah, well, like I say, I am an Arsenal fan, but you know, I'm delighted with how Arsenal have done. Even if we don't end up getting 4th, I can see the progression in the side. We've a really young side. The core of the side is really young. Smith Rowe, Saka, all these players coming through, and we look really good. And even if we don't get 4th, I think we're in a good place. Arteta signed a new deal. There's rumours of Jesus coming in the off season. So I think Arsenal are moving in the right direction. And you know, with 3 games gone at the start of the season, we were down in the bottom 3 places. So to be where we are now, you know, it's chalk and cheese. And like I say, we're moving in the right direction, so still quietly happy with how Arsenal are doing.
It certainly feels like there is a lot of stability now around the club, and you can nearly see what Arteta is trying to do, and I guess maybe what his plan was, though it didn't work, as you said, those first 3 games, particularly that Brentford one. Compared to now, it seems like the team is more of an identity.
Yeah, I bring it back to when Aubameyang, when he got rid of Aubameyang and he got rid of him to Barcelona. Now, Aubameyang is probably Arsenal's best player. If he was to come back tomorrow and play, he'd probably still be Arsenal's best player. But he was torn up late from meetings and, you know, I believe he flew home against the club's wishes. And he just wasn't, you know, acting like a captain should. And when you've got young players in the team and they're looking up to, they're the role models, they're torn up late to meetings, you can't have it. And it doesn't matter how good the player is, you've got to set an example. And with the way Arteta dealt with it, he just, you know, basically said, I don't care how good you are, if you're not going to toe the line, off you go. And I think that's resonated through the squad. The younger players have looked at it and thought, we need to knuckle down here, we've got to put a shift in or we're going to be out the door. And I think he just set a standard, and now the lads have lifted up to it, and long may it continue. I think it was a really good stroke from Arteta to deal with how he did. And like you said, there's a stability in the club now, and we're not getting rolled over easy. We do lose the odd game here and there, but we're not taking a battering. And because we have a young side, there's a little bit of inexperience. We bring the standards down here and there, but that comes with youth, and we just need a bit of consistency. And if we find that next year, I think, you know, hopefully we can make top four again next year if we find a bit of consistency. Because let's be honest, Liverpool and City are so far ahead of everybody that to bridge that gap, you know, you're probably talking the guts of it, 100 million to 200 million.
Yeah, Keith, just what you said there about Arteta, you know, you look back at the start of the year, he was maybe at one point, you know, maybe one game away from getting sacked, and through no fault of his own, it was probably the changing room that was swinging things, as you mentioned. And I'm a long-suffering Man United fan, and I just look at United, and that's the problem. You know, that does seem to be the problem, and there hasn't been anybody strong enough like Arteta to get rid of these players. And unfortunately at Man United, they are bigger than the club, you know.
Yeah, well, it certainly seems like that. But to be fair, you know, when Ollie was in there, Solskjaer, he seemed like a really nice guy. He didn't seem like he had that switch in him to just turn on a player completely and say, that's it, you're out the door. And when Rangnick comes in, he didn't have that power because he was only the interim manager. So he couldn't be going around burning bridges, although he seems to have...
Yeah, he's done a fair job now the last few weeks.
He seems to have turned the corner in the last couple of weeks and said, it doesn't matter, I'm burning as many bridges as I want now. But you get me point. At the start, he didn't seem to want to be able to do that, or had to want to do it. And it looks like Ten Hag, I've heard of situations with him dealing with players as well in pretty cutthroat manner as well. And I think that's what United need. I think there's a couple of players who don't always play at 100%, and they just need that little kick up the arse at a time. And I think Ten Hag does fit the bill to be able to do that.
Let's hope so.
Well, I don't know about that. Anyway, Keith Tracy, enjoy tomorrow night. Huge game, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
No bother. Cheers, girls.
Talk to you soon. RTE 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. It's time to turn our attention to boxing. Journalist Chris McNulty joins us now on the line. Chris, it's a busy day for the Irish women at the World Amateur Boxing Championships in Istanbul today. I haven't been able to check since 6 o'clock, but before that it was 3 wins from 4 for the Irish in action in Turkey. Bring us up to speed.
Yeah, 3 wins from 4 today. It continues a pretty good week so far, pretty solid start to the to the championships from an Irish perspective. Michaela Walsh, Amy Broadhurst and Carly McNall all winning today, going along with Lisa O'Rourke's win from earlier in the week. You know, it's been a pretty solid start for the Irish boxers. Shannon Sweeney, unfortunately, bowed out earlier in the week, and Aoife O'Rourke, the Irish middleweight, who got an absolutely rotten draw. And of course the sort of rules of the format changing for this event, the IBA going for an open draw, where ordinarily Aoife and Naomi Graham, the US boxer, would have been ordinarily seated, but unfortunately paired together, and Naomi Graham defeating Aoife O'Rourke in that one today. But 3 from 4 for Ireland today, and 4 wins so far this week, with three more still to open their championships later in the week.
So Chris, what are the prospects like now for the women over there?
Well, the prospects are quite good, Marie. I suppose you look at Michaela Walsh, who got a very, very tough draw, and another of Billy Walsh's stable from the US, Amelia Moore, and came out of that quite impressively today. she took 29-28 cards from three of the judges and two 30-27s, a unanimous decision. She stayed at a distance today and really boxed a smart fight, Michaela Walsh. That was a serious win for her today, and it gives her a significant boost. Amy Broadhurst, we know all about Amy. She sparred, of course, with Katie Taylor over in Connecticut before Katie's big fight a couple of weeks ago. And Amy has been, consistently meddling at international championships, and she was superb today. One judge even giving her a 30-25 card, and she beat Sarah Berham from Croatia quite comprehensively. There was one judge quite bafflingly give it as a 29-28 card to Broadhurst, but she was seriously impressive at 63 kilos and goes now against the Bulgarian at the weekend with a quarter-final place up for grabs. Charlie McNaugh as well was excellent. She gave her opponent from Burundi two counts this evening, and Charlie in convincing form right throughout that bout. You look at two of them. I mentioned Lisa O'Rourke. She had a great win over Mbawi Brigitte from the Dominican Republic earlier in the week, and she fights Maria Hernandez later this week. Quarterfinal bout up for grabs, and both Lisa and Nefe, who has yet to open her account, she goes in the Thursday afternoon session. Both of those are reigning under 22 gold medalists from earlier this year. So again, they're quite, going into this quite confident. So from an Irish perspective, Marie, even though we're missing Kelly Harrington, our star turn, the medal prospects are quite good for us.
Chris, how's it going, a fellow Letterkenny man? We could be having this conversation in the Central or somewhere, but we have to have it in 2FM.
I'm delighted to see that Marie has turned to the Donegal people for the expertise on the show.
This is it. Chris, just, looking at that female team, it's very young, and going forward, who does stand out as perhaps, following in the footsteps of Kelly?
Yeah, well, it is quite young, but I would also suggest, it's quite experienced. I mentioned Michaela Walsh and Amy Broadhurst, and from quite an early age, those two were obvious candidates to sort of take the baton and take the mantle of the likes of Kelly Harrington and Katie Taylor, and that remains so. They've been consistently performing at a high level, and both of them will go to the Commonwealth Games later this year, and again, it's another experience of a competitive international tournament. They have been too, and I suppose they've now come where maybe you can't even call them up and coming anymore. I mentioned Lisa O'Rourke and Nefe, who won under 22 gold medals. So, they have to go into that category as well. And actually, there's an interesting fight tomorrow in these championships. Casey Rock, who's again, obviously comes from great boxing stock down in Wicklow. She fights a girl tomorrow from Lithuania, Ostea Chuti, and to put something in perspective, and again, put a Donegal spin on this, Nadine, Ostea Chuti won 9 Irish titles while boxing for Finn Valley ABC.
Wow.
And in 2011 was a World Junior bronze medalist, but she has since in the last few years returned to Lithuania, and Ostea again was one of those boxers while she was in that Irish high performance setup would have been tipped to go far. So I suppose from an Irish perspective, that fight tomorrow, especially here in Donegal, we'll be watching along quite intensely for that one.
Excellent.
What's Casey's connection to the very famous Rock family then?
Yeah, so Casey is the daughter of the great Irish boxer Jim Rock, and Casey again has been sort of rising through the ranks, and I suppose given the family connections, her dad competed as a professional and won, he won Irish titles at four different weight divisions over the years, and Jim well known, he had 34 fights, winning 30 of them. So Casey certainly following in very, very strong footsteps.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on her. A lot of Irish sports fans will be very familiar with Jim, of course, and his heroics in the ring. So when we look at everything that's happening outside of the ring then, Chris, and the fallout from Bernard Dunne's departure from the IABA, and then you've Billy Walsh, who earlier in the week said that that people need to be made accountable for their actions, and he urged Sport Ireland and the government to look into what's happening. It doesn't seem like it's affecting what's going on in Istanbul, though, despite all the uncertainty outside of the ring.
No, and I suppose that testament to, you know, Nadine asked there a few moments ago about the sort of prospects of this. I mean, that is really testament to the talent of the individual boxers and obviously of the coaches, obviously under Zoran Dia, who are working tirelessly with this team over the last few months. You know, it's a credit to them that they haven't let that sort of that noise, that background noise, affect their performances. But, you know, there still remain obvious discrepancies and obvious issues within the IABA that really, really, you know, have to be sorted, or going forward we will have serious issues. I mean, Sport Ireland last week, at the tail end of last week, announced their funding, their next tranche of funding, and they've withheld, a significant tranche of funding from the IABA. And, you know, the IABA and its member clubs and all of its affiliates are absolutely and utterly reliant on such funding to maintain where they are, and that includes the high performance unit. So without that funding, I mean, it's now incumbent on the IABA, and like, we'll have the men's championships coming up in a couple of weeks' time as well. And, you know, Irish boxers are really, really at the forefront of the world, and they, you know, and it's incumbent now on these officials to basically sort themselves out, you know, to really sort of put a blunt line on it. They really, really have to. I mean, Sport Ireland have issued this week, the IABA, it's come to light in the last couple of days with a number of recommendations in terms of its governance, in terms of its sort of setup. They recommend the creation of a new 12-member board. Six of those are to be independent, and a number of key recommendations, Central Council to be cut from 37 to 15. I mean, it's quite remarkable. The IABA Central Council is sort of operated by 37 people, and Sport Ireland see fit to, you know, cut that by more than half, and a bit to sort of improve the governance of that, and probably something that won't go down well with the grassroots members. But again, look at these boxers in Istanbul and look at what they're doing, and, you know, we, and I use the word we in terms of just, you know, Irish sport, we need to keep the likes of Amy Broadhurst, Michaela Walsh, the up-and-coming girls like Casey Rock, and the other young boxers who are coming up and looking to keep Ireland to the forefront of the world. You know, they really, really have to sort themselves out now behind the scenes and ensure that the high performance and the other units do not suffer.
Yeah, and Chris, just on those recommendations and the governance, has a time frame been given for these recommendations to be implemented and the changes to happen?
Well, I suppose there's been no exact date put on it, but I mean, you would imagine, given that, you know, the funding was announced last week and stuff, and I mean, this is an issue that has been ongoing for quite a while, and you know, I do understand now that the outstanding issues, or the outstanding part of the IABA's own AGM, which was due to take place in December, I believe that is going to now take place at some point next month, and there'll be certain votes for certain positions. So, you know, you would imagine that there will be a kick in the backside from someone to sort this issue and to sort these issues out, you know, to ensure that funding does come from Sport Ireland, and to ensure that those units receive the funding that they have been receiving quite soon.
Yeah, that all makes sense anyway on the surface, Chris, but getting it done behind the scenes is always the tricky part. But look, no doubt you'll keep us up to date over the next little while. Thank you, as always, for joining us, and looking forward to seeing how all those how all the girls get on tomorrow as well in Istanbul. We'll talk to you soon, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are going to turn our attention to Gaelic Games. Nadine Doherty is with me in studio. Nadine, a lot of the focus over the last few days has been on the AFLW and just what players are going, what players are not going. And the focus now is very sharply shifted to when it is going to start. So Sarah Rowe speaking to the media today in The Independent, and she has hit out the unfair treatment of the AFLW players at the uncertainty over the start date of the new season. So this has forced many to put their lives on hold. Essentially, it's affecting the Irish players because they don't know whether they can or can't play ladies football. A lot of them just can't because they can't commit and they're not sure about when they're going to have to go back. But it's a tricky time for these Irish players trying to juggle everything.
Yeah, there's just a few things about this. I suppose this move has been mooted for a long time. You know, a decision between codes in the same year was always inevitable. It's come around now. The AFLW, they don't care about the LGFA, really, let's be honest. They see it as a pool to pull players and get access to. I'm just really surprised the date hasn't been set because it's a professional league and at the minute they're acting in a very unprofessional manner, and I don't think it would happen in the men's AFL, to be honest. A start date should absolutely be in place so teams can organise their calendars, so that's surprising. I suppose on an Irish front, Sinéad Goldrick and Lara McGee played for Dublin at the weekend. So I think this might come down to the way different counties are approaching it. You know, has Sarah decided to opt out or was she given an ultimatum by Michael Moyles? We don't really know that. Now, I know she said in the article that they've been trying to work together, but maybe Moyles wants all in for definite. We'll know the answer to that at the weekend when the Connacht final is played, and will the Kellys line out? Will they be in the squad? Will Rachel Cairns be there? Yeah, look, I have empathy towards the girls, but I suppose, not that I don't have much sympathy, but it was always going to happen and it's going to be difficult. And look, it's looking at players going. Eric O'Shea this week, Vicky Wall seems to be an almost definite. I would hope that the fact they have to make a decision might make more players stay and not go.
Do you think it would? No. Like Erica Shea's so young, you know, like you're
so
looking
young.
At her, she's
yeah.
still a teenager,
yeah.
isn't she? Yeah. Like she's 19, 20.
Yeah, 19, 20. You know, younger players might think, look, I have plenty of time to play GA down the line, I'm going to give it a go. You might have older players who just feel they're not going to go. I just hope they don't go.
Yeah, it is really difficult. And listening to those, even just that Mayo case, and listening to the players that she named there. Like,
Aileen Gilroy as well, who hasn't been
home. Yeah. See, like that. They're the box office players that you're losing.
That's it. And I'm just being selfish as a GA fan. I just want them all to stay. But as I've said it before, you wouldn't blame them for going at all. I mean, what a life for a couple of months. But you might just have players who prefer Gaelic football and they have, you know, no interest in losing a season of their career.
Yeah.
But we'll just wait and see.
I guess it's probably the competition as well, who realistically feel like they can win All-Ireland, because I mean that's what it comes down to, like, all the time, really, you know, what teams, what players think their teams or counties are going to be able to get there.
Yeah, you know, you could be a mid-level team and with no realistic opportunity in 3 to 5 years of winning in Ireland, so the sunshine's calling, professional league, you're probably going to go, you know.
Yeah, it is pretty difficult. So the season goes on, though. Like, that's the thing. I mean, life goes on everywhere, and there's no county that isn't going to be able to field a team because
exactly.
some players are going to Australia. They might not be able to field the best 15 in the whole county, but they will be able to get out and play. So at the moment, Nadine, we're in the middle of the provincial series, and you know, we're seeing some games, some of them better than others. You could tell by some of them as well that they're looking ahead to championship and maybe not putting a huge amount of focus, but not all teams are doing that.
Yeah, not a huge amount of focus, but at the same time, like, the All-Ireland Finals, they end in July. That's not very far away. So I suppose looking at Ulster first, my own province, you know, Armagh gave Monaghan an awful thumping there a couple of weeks ago, and I was kind of surprised at that because I expected Armagh to win, obviously, but Monaghan had such a good, solid Division 2. I thought they'd put up a bit more of a fight, but I think they've lost a couple of players since then. So look, Armagh will be happy enough with that, not that it they won't learn much from it. Donegal put in a really solid performance against Cavan there at the weekend in their semi-final, and it was pretty routine, but Donegal will be happy because they've had a few sticky Ulster semi-finals the last few years. And what was great to see, Deirdre Foley is back on the panel. Niamh Hegarty got another game under her belt. Suzanne White had a great performance, and Donegal were missing Karen Guthrie, so look, they'll be delighted with that. So now we're looking at a Donegal-Armagh final in 2 weeks' time in Clonus, and Armagh are going for 3 in a row, and I would feel that Donegal will want to continue on this great run of form they're on and back up that performance against Meath in the league final. So yeah, and Munster semi-finals. We have Cork and Waterford this weekend, and Dungarvan. Cork, disappointing league. They'll be looking to bounce back. And we had Kerry beat Tipperary convincingly a few weeks ago, 2-12 to 8 points. And again for Kerry, I've mentioned her before, Katie Cronin was brilliant at the back. And your usual players up front, your Louise Muhertig, etc., were fantastic. So that was our Munster and Ulster. And then looking at Leinster, Dublin comprehensively beat Westmeath a few weeks ago, and Westmeath face into a match against Meath this weekend, which they probably won't be looking forward to. But the big one was Dublin and Meath at the weekend in Parnell Park. You probably saw the pictures.
It looks like an absolute cracker.
Cracker. Massive crowd. Few bits of controversy now. I would have felt the refereeing was a bit suspect at times. Dublin definitely were not happy. Mick Bohan was very animated in the sideline, and I think the biggest call that the video actually was up this week was the Meath goal, and Vicky Wall clearly tripped Sinead Goldrick on the first tackle, won the ball, and then there was a bit of a question, I would have thought, when she offloaded the ball, she charged through Leah Caffrey, but the ref let it go, and in the end up that score was the difference.
So how impressive were those two teams, like, as a, I guess, are they the two outliers, do you think?
Yeah. I still put Donegal well in the mix, to be honest. But the pace of that game was phenomenal. And I know we talk about it all the time, but that Meath system, it's very hard to see it being broken down. Now, Donegal created 39 scoring chances against them in the league final, and their downfall was not being able to take them. But here, Dublin did not create enough scoring chances to win that game, and only they had that bit of a comeback, I suppose, at the end. Meath could have been further out of sight. The thing with Meath, there's a few things with them. The pace of their transition, nobody is near that. Nobody can get near it. Dublin tried to move the ball quickly. They kicked the ball. They did everything they could, but they just couldn't match the pace. While the ref probably let Meath away with a few things, you know, they kind of, I suppose, have that All-Ireland champions tag where refs give you that little bit of leeway. I thought their tackling was excellent at times, especially when they sucked Dublin into the D, and Emma Troy and the two Avines on either wing half back, they were unbelievable. And Vicky Wall, everything centres around Vicky. Their game plan centres around Vicky. They play everything to suit Vicky, and why not? She's the best player in the country at the minute, and so of course you're going to suit your game plan to suit Vicky.
It's amazing that they've been able to perfect this game plan and evolve the game in ways as well in such a short period of time and out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. And a few of us were chatting actually after the game. I didn't think I would see a team with the pace, the physicality and the strength and conditioning as that Dublin team who won the 3 or 4 in a row. I really didn't. I didn't think I'd see it in the next 10 years. And then Meath come along and 18 months later, they've absolutely surpassed that. I mean, it's incredible, their conditioning. What I would love to see someday, and I know I probably won't see it, is Emma Duggan on the 45 just playing as a centre forward.
Why do you think we won't see it?
Because I don't think it would suit the panel as a whole, to be honest. I don't think it would suit their game plan. I don't think they'd be as strong with that, because they wouldn't be able to play that transition football that they play. It would be more, I suppose, free-flowing football, and that's not going to suit the players they have. I also think it would take away from Vicky's game, and again, they don't want to do that. We might see it if Vicky goes to Australia. If other players go to Australia, but at the minute, if that squad sticks together, why change a system that is working phenomenally well?
It'd be so hard for me if they do lose players like that, though.
Yeah, definitely. And while they are developing their squad, even looking at the programme here from the other day, you know, there's players coming back in, like Kelsey Nesbitt's back in there. They made 4 or 5 subs. You have Niamh Galgally coming back in, Emma White, Kira Smith, Bridgetta Lynch came on. There is a squad there, but that core group of 16, 17, if that's disrupted significantly with obviously Vicky and 2 or 3 others, I think teams around the country will be very happy.
And even from a leadership point of view as well, and just the experience that they will have brought over the last couple of years, to lose players of that calibre, look, I mean, it is happening all over the place. But with me, that just seems like they're such central characters.
They are, and they're so young, but they're so experienced. Like, those girls have played probably more times in Croke Park than a lot of players around the country are in their 30s. You know, between their intermediate success, now with this senior run, their Division 2, you know, very, very hard to get players of that experience and leadership up to the level that those girls are at, so that could affect them. And another thing is as well, you know, their management team, they mightn't be about forever, you know, and that's something we could talk about again. When you're that successful with any team, other teams are going to come calling. So
yeah, and the only thing that will, that the expectation that comes with that and then as well, is that you keep winning. And when you're not winning, you're deemed as being not successful because you're not winning.
So, yeah, yeah. But
as Mick Mohan will probably found out.
That's it. You know, and again, just come back to, you know, when you are All-Ireland champions, you do get that little bit of leeway with the referee. You also play with the chest out. Like, we were talking about Aveen Cleary and Aveen Cleary and Aveen Leahy. I always get them mixed up. Like, they're very slight girls. You know, they're not massively strength and conditioned, but the strength of them. And I was talking to somebody, I was like, you do get that extra 20% of speed and strength and bravery when you're winning. You know, when you have that win mentality, you're more likely to win that ball, you're more likely to go on that run, you have that buzz. So if this winning streak keeps going, which I do expect it will, they're going to be hard to stop this year.
And what about Dublin then? Like, Mick obviously quite animated and frustrated at times, and again, he said himself, the highest of standards, where it's winning or nothing.
Yeah. I don't know what it is with them. Obviously, you know, losing to me, they beat me the last day, but losing there, I think they're missing that experience, you know, that leadership. You talk about that leadership group, like Niamh Mack is gone, Sinead Ahern didn't play. Like, I was watching there and they had a few real kickable frees in the first half and nobody was going to take them. They actually went short and they came back. I thought Jennifer Dunn was phenomenal in the middle of the field. She was unbelievable. She was everywhere. Absolute leader. Another leader who I love, you know, Lindsay Davies. She had a quiet game. She found it hard. She found it physical in there. I still expect them to be there, thereabouts. And you know what? You know, I don't think Mick will be overly disappointed with that result, because he has a lot more to come. Name wise anyway, you know, players to bring on. Dublin played well for 15 minutes at the end. They had a lot of possession in the first half, but they really could have been dead and buried. So they still have that resilience. You know, if that was any other team and Meath got that goal, tagged on 4 or 5 points, another team may have laid down and it was game over, but Dublin kept going. They have young White at centre forward, you know, she did quite well. I think Dublin up front were a little bit light physically and that didn't stand to them because they couldn't break that tackle. I was also surprised that Mick didn't stick with the width that they used against Meath when they played them in Navan the last game. While they brought a little bit of width to it, it wasn't as wide as I'd seen before, which worked against Meath the last time. Now, unless Meath really studied that tape, which they probably did, and, you know, they probably tried to do something to counteract that. But look, Dublin will be there. I just think they need more pace. They probably need to change it up a little bit and their transition needs to speed up. And I think Mick will work on that. I mean, if there's any other coach in the game who's going to work on it, it'll be him. You know, nobody better to come up with the game plan.
I know this time last year we were talking about how the women who'd went to Australia and came back, how they had adapted to the game again, and you saw firsthand Sinead Goldrick and Lauren McGee playing. Was it different to this time last year?
Lauren came on at half time, massive pace. Lauren always had huge pace, but she's probably gained a couple of yards, to be honest, playing over there. Sinead Goldrick was tasked with following Emma Duggan around the pitch. And it was only the last 10 minutes when Dublin's backs were against the wall that she got a little bit of freedom and she pushed up and she was actually the catalyst for Dublin coming back into it. Look, Goldie and Lauren were always absolute athletes, and the fact now that Goldie's fit, she doesn't seem to be carrying any injuries, they both just picked up where they left off with probably a little bit more pace, if that's possible for them, you know.
So what you're saying is they women that are coming back, they're not suffering really at all. Like, you know, there's been so much criticism about players going away and coming back and not being able to get to the pace of the game as quick as they might have been in the past.
Yeah, and I think they were coming back at a different time. You know, last year, like, it was a different time. They're literally coming off the back of that season. They don't seem to have taken a break in training. I think, you know, last year the girls were given a rest for a bit longer and maybe they were carrying a few niggles and then they were delayed coming back in.
There was a bit of travel, I think,
there was a bit of travel and different things, whereas now they just, the two girls seem to have slotted back in, and if they stay injury-free, they'll and depend on the starting date for this AFL, those two girls will be starting for Dublin, I'd feel. And Lauren was unfortunate to get Simbind. You know, she was very frustrated. I wouldn't have blamed her myself, to be honest. So
we do have a bit of time to go before the, as you'd said, it's probably actually not that long, the middle of July, end of July, we're going to have All-Ireland finals. We'll be doing a championship preview closer to the time. But when you're looking at the end of the summer, who are the teams going to be left standing?
I see Dublin, Meath and Donegal in a top three at the minute. Cork were so, so poor in the league. I don't think we can put them in that bracket yet. So you're looking at a middle bracket then of Cork, Armagh, Galway, Mayo. And then after that, you know, if anybody features, it'll be a big surprise to me. But Dublin, Meath, Donegal at the minute. That's where we're looking at.
And I think of Cork without Erica O'Shea as well.
If she's going, and will miss the championship, it'll be a struggle. But then with Cork, you don't know. The players are there for them to make a push. Nothing more dangerous than a Cork team coming in under the radar with no expectations from the public.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, now we are going to change codes and go to men's football. I'm delighted to be joined by Laois footballer Collins Ubuchukwu. Following today's launch of Super Values Community Includes Everybody campaign, now in their 13th year of supporting the GAA All-Ireland Senior Football Championship, Super Value is once again calling on each and every member of GAA communities across the country to do what they can to make their community more diverse and inclusive. Collins, how are you?
Hi, how are you? How are you keeping?
Great. It's really good to chat to you. I've heard so much about you over the last while. So for people that don't know you, Collins, you were the first Nigerian-born player to play for the Laois Senior Footballers. But having looked at your career over the last while, it's been a bit of a journey, and it hasn't always been Gaelic football. You've been a soccer player as well.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I did kick a bit. I did dibble and dabble in that.
You're underselling yourself here a bit now, Collins. I mean, you didn't just dibble and dabble. You were quite an established soccer player.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your sporting career.
I'll start from maybe like playing football back over in Newbridge, Kildare, where I kind of grew up. So I would have played for my local club, Meathrestown, and it literally started from there. And went to played there for a while, and I went playing as well for Texas in Newbridge. So with the soccer, I was with Newbridge till about, geez, I couldn't tell you now. But I think I was with Newbridge till about 15, and I went over and played with Bohemians, and then when I went off with Bohemians, then went to Scotland and played a bit of football in Scotland, then obviously to England, to Crawley Town. So yeah, it's been a journey.
It really has, and it's been a journey that brought you from Crawley Town into lockdown, like a lot of people, and then onto the Gaelic football pitch. How did you find the step up to senior inter-county level?
It was different, you know, because obviously it's not something that I've been used to, and just joining a senior panel for the club team, you know, it was a big step up as well. So I just kind of had to like go with it and, you know, try and keep up with the pace and try and get back the skills of playing GAA again, you know, the physicality of it I kind of knew and kind of still had, but it was more of the skills and stuff and the pace of the game. I had to kind of get myself back into it, really.
Yeah, and From what I gather, you played a man-marking role on several occasions. Is that what you enjoy?
It's what, like I said, I'm there. Like, whatever the manager wants me to do, I kind of do it and do it to the best of my abilities, really. So it's not even like I enjoy it. It's just whatever I can do for my team to get the win at the end of the game. That's what I have to kind of do. So, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Because there's some games that when you're man-marking a guy, you kind of have to take yourself out of the game just to take the person out of the game. And that's not really good because you're playing a game and you want to be involved in it, you know. But you have to kind of just sacrifice for the team.